Thank you very much for an excellent introduction. The name is called Soskundi. And let me just get my stuff set up here, and I'll try and talk at the same time. Multitasking. They say women do it better than men. I'm not so sure. I just want to say thank you so much for allowing me to share about what I am doing in Papua New Guinea amongst the Soskundi people. And I think I did something wrong already. Anyway, it is just a pleasure to be able to share of what is going on. And I hope that by the end of this, you will kind of see a little bit of my vision as well as catch a bit of a vision yourselves for what is going on around the world. I want you to take a moment to reflect on what would your life be like if you never had a Bible. Would you be a believer? You may have heard the gospel from somewhere, but would you have grown? How would you have grown as a believer? I want to take a moment and read a little bit out of Psalm 119. What I love about Psalm 119, it is a chapter, a psalm, that is primarily about the Word of God and how it impacted the psalmist's life and how much he loved the Word of God. Starting at verse 11, which was actually already read this morning, and going through to verse 16. I'm reading from the New Living Translation, Psalm 119, 11 through to 16. I have hidden your word in my heart, that I might not sin against you. Blessed are you, O Lord. Teach me your principles. I have recited aloud all the laws you have given us. I have rejoiced in your decrees as much as in riches. I will study your commandments and reflect on your ways. I will delight in your principles and not forget your word. Verse 105. Your word is a lamp for my feet and a light for my path. For over 2,000 language groups around the world, they don't have this lamp. They don't have this light for their feet. They may have heard the gospel. They may have even accepted it. But how are they going to grow? It's not in their language. It's not even an option for them. You and I here are rich. We are wealthy. We don't just have one version of this. We have multiple versions. We can't even go through, a lot of us don't go through even all the versions that there are. The Soskundi people are one of those people who do not have the Word of God in their language. There are churches there. They read the Bible out of a language that is not their own. And for most of them, they just allow the pastor to read it, and when they go home, they don't ever look at it again because it really doesn't touch their heart. When we read it in our language, in our heart language, it changes us and we grow. In 2009 is when I started working with the Soskundi people full-time. And I had started working with them years before in 2005, just off and on in workshops, training two men to do some translation. And I realized that this people group, without full-time help, would never continue any farther. And so I went to visit. I had a survey done to make sure that it was even going to make sense to go there and do this amount of work. But one of the things that always held me back was that I did not have someone to work with. And I did not feel that God wanted me to go on my own. But by the end, by 2009, when I was going back to Papua New Guinea again, I really felt that God did want me to go there. So I said, okay, God, I'm going. I don't know where you're leading right now. It might not look the same as a full-blown language project, but I'm going to go. At that time is when he sent someone else, Elvira Corbalan from Argentina. And Elvira and another young woman were wanting to get some village experience, so they came out to my village. And on the third day, when she was in my village, she fell down the ladder of the house where we were at, and I thought, well, there goes their experience. Am I going to have to fly her out of here or what? But the interesting thing was, by the end of that trip, she goes, Karina, I love what you're doing there. I want to be a part of this. Can I join you? And I thought, well, if she was willing to do that after suffering through trying to go down these terrible ladders that they have for their homes. And later on, the next visit out, she fell and she put her hands out against a sago palm tree. Sago palm trees have thorns that are about this long, and the thorn tips break off under your skin. So she had fallen against this palm tree and had 18 thorn tips just in one hand. And at the end of that, she still said, Karina, I want to join you in this work. So I figured, okay. And the Lord has just blessed our time together, and I couldn't imagine anyone else to work with. She only learned English 3 years ago, so we have some interesting conversations. It's a good thing I understand a little bit of Spanish. Our house is in Jikinimbu Village. Jikinimbu Village is what they call in the shape of a crocodile, so it's the crocodile village. And on the left-hand side is the head of the crocodile, the right-hand side is the tail. And there's two of the legs going out. And our house is right in the belly of the crocodile. Our village father, Peter, who I have worked with since 2005, he built us this house. It is built high enough off the ground so that we can use it as a place of work. We hold workshops and training underneath the house. We sleep on the floor on just a thin little air mattress with a mosquito net. We cook over an open fire. On the left-hand side, you will see, is our fireplace and our very black kettle sitting on top of it. This is our dining room with our cat. He's sleeping in my chair as usual. I don't actually get to sit in my chair. He does. And to communicate with the outside world, we use a two-way radio. It's hooked up to a car battery, and we have a solar panel on the roof. Now, that gives us enough power that we can use that radio for a few minutes every day. We can charge our computers once, and we can have about 2 hours of light with one 12-watt light bulb in the evening. So 2 hours of light in the evening. And sundown is by 7 o'clock, so it's pretty dark after 9. This is our cleaning lady. She comes in very regularly, several times a day, and she cleans up any crumbs that we may have dropped. And she only leaves a few crumbs of her own. We actually love her very much because she also gives us eggs. We put out a little box for her, and then she gives us an egg each day, and we can have some pancakes. But the funny part is, actually, our cat tries to sit on the egg, and he has not managed yet to hatch one, but, you know, he keeps trying. These are our next-door neighbors. They are not so friendly out there, and I do not recommend petting them or holding them. They are rather violent. And we actually had one escape at one point, and he was under our house, which we also were not so thrilled about. The owner of these crocodiles, he actually raises them for money. He will kill the crocodiles when they are a certain size and sells the skin, and if we are lucky, we get some of the meat. But anyway, the one day he comes to me and he goes, oh, Cordy, I need a Band-Aid. And so I look at his foot, it's all chopped up, and I'm thinking, what happened to you? And so he says, well, I was out checking my fish nets, and there were two crocodiles in them. And this is exciting for him because this is money. And he said, but I did not have anything to tie them up with. So I decided I would wrap them in my shirt, and I stuck them in the canoe, and they got away. So if you can imagine a man and two crocodiles in a canoe, and what kind of an exciting trip that would have been. One of the things that we have concentrated a lot in the last 2 years is learning about the culture of the people. They eat for their staple diet a starch that they get from the sago palm tree. That same palm tree that has the thorns that are this long, they actually use for their main source of food. They pound the inside until they have a mulch, and then they take and rinse that, wash it, with swamp water. Okay, in order to cook it, you have two ways that they generally will cook it. They will fry it, just this starch. They fry it, and it just tastes like starch. And they call those pancakes. And then the other way, which is not my favorite way, and Elvita refuses to eat it. She puts it on my plate. And anyway, it is where they mix this starch with some cold water. Then they add boiling water to it, and they stir it until it all of a sudden congeals into this gelatinous, gooey mass. And this is what they eat. Now, if you can picture or try to imagine in your minds what this, it would taste like, it's like starch, kind of like cornstarch, but you mix it with swamp water, and so it tastes really like congealed swamp water. And in the one village, we called it cow water because the cattle were in the river where they got the water from. And so it really, I do not go out here for the food. The other part of their staple diet is fish. And so when World War II was on, the Americans were bombing in this area where I'm working, and this left big craters which have filled up with water. And in there is where we have a lot of fish, because when the river floods, the fish go into these deeper sections, and when the river recedes, of course, they're trapped in there. And this is a fun activity to be involved in, getting the fish. What the women do, this is a women's event only, men are not part of this, okay? The women will all go around this little kind of pond, and then at the signal, they will all jump in at the same time, and they are splashing and hooting and hollering and kicking. Now, the reason for this, the fish are at the bottom. And if you stir up the mud at the bottom, then the fish will come to the top and to the side of the pond. And so then all you need to do is jump out, grab your net, and start scooping up the fish. Now, when you're done, I actually look more like them by the time I'm done. I have nice dark skin. Part of being involved in their culture is being a part of their celebrations. And this was a celebration where one of our supervisors was coming to visit, to see the people. And the people put on a big show. Now, these people here were not quite so dressed up as some of them, where they're all in their traditional dress. But what they do is they come to you with mud, and they start smearing the mud on your face. You're the guest. You get the nice mud on your face. And then they start slapping you under the chin. This is a welcome. Okay? And then there's this guy that's dressed up in a full-body mask, from above his head down to the ground, and he has this broom, and he starts whacking you with the broom. This is welcome. By the time you're done, you have welts on your legs, and you feel very welcomed. So anyway, Elvira is smiling in this picture, but it is not a happy smile. This is a I'm in pain smile. And another part of their culture that we participate in is when someone dies. This funeral was one that really affected us. It was of a young man who was about 20 years old. And we had been seeing changes in this young man's life. Previously, he was drunk a lot and just had no purpose in his life at all. And on this weekend, he was actually going to be coming to one of our workshops that we were going to be running in his village. But his brother and brother-in-law had other ideas for him. They wanted him to go to his mother's language area to go through the initiation rites of a young man. That includes scarification. So what they do is they take razor blades and they make cuts all the way down the man's arms, his entire front until his legs about here, and all the way down his back, and it's done to make it look like a crocodile. And then they put stuff on there so that these cuts will get infected. And that way you produce a nice scar on each of those cuts. Well, he did not want to go. He was wanting to come to our workshop instead. But his brother and brother-in-law must have given him something, and he became violently ill from it, and he never actually made it alive to his mother's village. He passed away before he got there, just as they were about to arrive. And so he was actually thinking about working with one of our other guys, and we were just so disappointed that this had happened to him. Our house we have built in such a way that it is a place for work. This is a workshop that we were holding underneath the house. We made it so that people can come at any time, even just wandering by the village, they see something going on, they are free to come and observe what we are doing. Nothing is hidden. No one can say, we don't know what's going on. They just need to look over at our house and they can see. This is our village father, Peter, and the one day he came to me and he said, I would like to learn how to type. And so we brought out an extra keyboard that was a little bit bigger for his fingers than what I have here, and he started to learn how to type. I would not be surprised if he will be learning how to use a computer next, and I wouldn't be surprised if all of a sudden he will own a computer. We also take care of wounds. One of the things about living at about 100 feet above sea level in the tropics is that cuts get infected very quickly and they become very bad very quickly. We have had a number of people who have died just because of a little cut, a little injury, gets infected. The nearest hospital is over 2 days away, and so by the time they get there, it is too late. One of the other things we do is we work with the children. After school, a lot of the children like to come over to our house, and we have prepared books in Soskundi for them. And so they can come and do various activities and read the books that we have prepared for them. And the girl that you see at the front of the photo there, she is in grade 6. She's going to school, but the school is in English. She has no understanding of English. And so she cannot read. And she was to the point where she was actually not going to school very often anymore. And we had her over, and we started trying to teach her a little bit from the Soskundi, her own language. By the end of that day, she was reading in her own language, understanding what she was reading, and as you can see, having a great time of it. One of the main tasks that we are faced with now is starting to train translators. And so we have 10 men who have volunteered their time to learn how to do translation. This is 8 of them, and we've got 2 others that are not in this photo. And after the workshop, the first workshop that we had with them, they were saying, oh, We feel like we are attending a Bible school. One of the things is they don't know how to use the Bible that they even have, the Tokpisin. Even what they do understand, they cannot use. They don't know how to put anything in alphabetical order, and so all of the resources in the back are in alphabetical order. They are useless to them. And so we start at the very basics. These men have a maximum of grade 6 education, and so this is what we're working with to try and do Bible translation with. And so we have to get them up to a level where they can understand and be working on their own. And so where we're starting is with basic education type things. And their grade 6 is not like our grade 6. It's more like a grade 2-3. Not all of our translators, I'm going to call them the translators, not all of them are believers. The man on your right, his name is Vincent, and when he first came to us, he was chosen by his community. It was not because he wanted to be a part of what we were doing. And so the first few times he would sit there very angry. I have to be here. My community says I have to be here. And was not at all participating. And we thought, okay, this is going to be interesting with this one guy who really doesn't want to be here. But as we were working with the Word of God, we started to notice a change. Vincent is now the very first person to come to any of our workshops. He is often coming and asking what he can do to help us, and we have just seen a complete turnaround in his life, and we have great hopes for him. This is Raymond. I talked a little bit about Raymond this morning in the Sunday school, and Raymond has been the greatest blessing to us. He has attended a literacy training program. This program teaches him to become a teacher of children in his community, to develop a curriculum on his own. And one of the other things that we really do a lot of is Bible studies. We want these men to be solid believers when they are leaving our training. And Raymond has stood strong no matter what has come at him. And even when his daughter was dying, and he did not know whether she would live or not, rather than running back, he said, "I believe in God. I trust Jesus." And so we are praying that he will be able to continue to stand strong. There he is with some of the kids that he's teaching. He's just so fabulous with children. It's fun to watch. One of the other things we do a lot of is recording worship songs. The people there love to sing. And so we have actually produced 3 cassettes so far, and we produce a songbook that goes with it. And then we also have started cassette number 4. It's one of the jobs I need to do as soon as I get back in January. And I should mention the response to these songs. We had been hiking through the entire language area, and we come to this one village during market time. And we come towards the market, and I hear singing. And I tell Elvita, "I think that's one of our songs that we've done." And we walk a bit farther, and we see this group of people all standing around one of the songbooks that we produced, singing. It was part of an even evangelistic meeting that they were holding to evangelize their own people. And so it was a really exciting thing to see that what we're doing is actually being used, and they are using it to do outreach to their own people. In order to visit other villages, we have quite a challenge of getting to the other villages. We have to cross log bridges like this one. There's no handrail. There's logs at the bottom. You don't want to be falling in. It will be painful. It's not just water. And Elvita actually has a man behind her holding her shoulders so that she will not fall off the log. And our longest stretch of walking along logs is actually 1 hour, where we never are leaving the logs. So it's over the swamps, and you're just continuing on for 1 hour. When we go to the other villages, we don't just go to visit, we also hold workshops, helping them to read in their language and helping them to know exactly what we are doing there. And I always carry some of these books that I have prepared, and whenever there's a crowd of people, they all are curious about the white person who comes. I take out one of these books and I begin to read to the people. And by the time I am done, there's someone with their hand out ready to grab that book from me to try reading it themselves. We have also discovered that we have about 1,000 Soskundi speakers who are living in settlements in towns. These are squatter settlements. They are very poor. And to get an idea of what poor is, there is not enough space in their house to sleep on the floor for every one of them to sleep at the same time. They have to sleep in shifts. We have about 3,500 speakers of the Soskundi language, and then an additional approximate 1,000 in towns. So where we're heading in the future. One of the things that I still need to concentrate on a lot is learning the language. It is not an easy language. It's very different from English. And I'm to the point now where I'm able to make really bad mistakes. And so one of the mistakes that I made, I was trying to tell someone how I had searched and searched and searched for this one woman. Instead, I said, I killed her, killed her, killed her. And I'm sure they were wondering what kind of missionary this was that had come into their area. Another one of the things we're wanting to do is complete and print the Soskundi Dictionary, and that I'm planning on finishing up this next year. We are going to be continuing to train translators. In fact, right in the next week or so, Elvira will be going down to the village again to run another workshop. We plan to begin translating the Book of Luke, and we are starting to do Bible studies to get the people, the men, so that they know and understand well the Book of Luke first. We are translating Sunday school materials. We have already done 1 year's worth. We are just in the checking process of that and hope to have that out in January. And we will be continuing to assist Raymond with his preschool. And we have another man in the works who is getting ready to do more training and help Raymond, but he will be helping by working in another village. So, on our own, this is a huge task. In fact, we cannot do it. But go joromba kwan guane du apatekutkundu. Luke 1 verse 37. For nothing is impossible with God. Thank you very much. Say one more. Can I? Yeah. At the back, I have some prayer sheets. So if you want to be praying for some of the men that we are working with, and one of the ladies actually that we're starting to work with, you can pick this up and it will help you if you're interested in praying for them. Thank you.